Maine's new internet privacy law. One of the hundreds of bills recently signed into law by Governor Janet Mills creates new consumer privacy protections for internet users. It is one of the most restrictive such bills in the country and is slated to go into effect on July 1st of next year. Even though the bill received bipartisan support, it passed unanimously in the Maine Senate, most expect that it will be challenged in court. Opponents to the bill say it violates the U.S. Constitution's Internet Commerce Clause. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Just what kind of data do internet service providers collect and sell? What do they know about us, and how is it being used? And what does Maine's law mean for consumers and the country? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Anytime you go online to do a search or order something with a credit card, some of your private information is exposed. Lack of internet privacy is a concern for many people, and Maine recently passed a tough new law to address some of these concerns. Today, we will learn more about the complex issues around internet privacy. Joining me in the studio, Elise Nielsen, who is an IT security and privacy consultant who founded WebGistics based in Maine. Karem Durda is president and chief operating officer of GWI, an internet service provider based in Biddeford. And joining us on the line from Alabama, where she is at a conference, Gigi Sohn, a nationally recognized net neutrality expert and public advocate. She is a distinguished fellow at the Georgetown Institute for Technology Law and Policy and a Benton Senior Fellow. She served as counselor to the chairman of the FCC and worked on the 2016 broadband privacy rules. As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about protecting your information online? Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Thank you all for being here. Such a complex topic. Gigi, I want to start with you. You have been deeply involved in the issues around net neutrality and internet privacy level at the federal level for years. Can you walk us through the basics of how people's private information has become more accessible and the major efforts to protect that information?
Sure, absolutely. But first I want to thank Maine legislators, and I apologize for some odd reason somebody is messaging me and I can't seem to get out of it. But I want to thank Maine legislators for actually listening to their constituents and passing both a privacy bill and a net neutrality bill over the very strong objections of the broadband industry. And I personally saw, when I came up to testify in favor of the privacy bill, I saw at least three or four very highly paid broadband lawyers coming up to try to convince legislators not to pass this bill. So congratulations first. So let me explain a little bit, particularly about how broadband providers, so these are the companies, AT&T, Comcast, Verizon, Charter, and some of the smaller companies like GSI, they provide the on-ramp to the internet, right? So you can't get to Google, you can't get to Facebook, you can't get to Netflix unless you pay one of these providers to provide you the on-ramp to the internet. And what makes them unique is that they can see every single thing you do, every website you go to, every device you turn on. If you have a smart home, if you turn on your TV and have a smart TV, they know when you're watching TV. So they have access to a wealth of information, frankly, far more than Google and Facebook have. And on top of that, they have your name, they have your address, they may have your social security number because you have a customer relationship with them. So they have enormous dossier on who you are and what you do. So it's very simple. By virtue of providing that pipe to the internet, they have an enormous wealth of information about you.
Elise, I want to ask you how this is being used, this wealth information that these internet service providers have. What kind of data are they packaging? Who are they selling it to? How does this work?
So for this information that they have, it's pretty much everything. And the way that you can actually see how much information they have on you, and we've all experienced this, is you go surfing on the web and all of a sudden you start getting ads for something that you just searched upon. And it pops up. I actually had a discussion today with an individual, and she was explaining how she had been looking for a certain type of light bulb. And it just hit every single ad that she had. Her husband, and the kids were seeing this all over. And they're basically using this to be able to say, based upon your demographics, we're going to be doing targeted advertising based upon your age group, based upon who lives in the county, those type of things, so that they can get you to go with those products.
Is it mainly being used for advertising, or are there other uses for your data that we aren't as aware of, but we need to be?
There are other uses for the data that also occur. Advertising is a large perspective of it, but it's basically trending and analysis on what you actually are doing in the home and searching. So if you are basically looking up for gun laws in the area of Maine to see, hey, what are my gun rights and where am I at? And then that actually gets into, that may be sold to a lobby, to other big data corporations, and they can see that this was something that was an interest of yours. And the question becomes why. So that's where it is actually sensitive.
Graham, what does GWI use customer data for?
Well, we're maniacal supporters of net neutrality and data privacy. So we never, ever, ever sell any of our customers' data anywhere.
So you're unusual in the business, it sounds like.
We're very unusual in the business. I think we're one of the most 20 or 30 progressive ISPs in the country.
Does that put you at a competitive disadvantage to not be using data?
No, actually no, because for us, the consumer rights are preeminent and predominant in our decision making. So for us, we have their trust, we have their verification, we're part of their communities, we live with them, we breathe with them, we're trying to bring 21st infrastructure in Maine and around the country. So for us, it is a competitive, unique differentiator above and beyond the monopolistic behemoths that control and dominate the environment.
What would you say to add to what Gigi and Elise have told us about how your competitors are using data? What do we need to know that we don't know?
Well, I truly think that there are some tendencies that they tend to behave in which are not in the consumer's best interests. Whether it's utilizing the data and monetize it in underhanded ways where we have absolutely no visibility to, or use it as a mechanism to perhaps even throttle services, block services, prioritize services. There are various mechanisms, the larger ISPs, the ones that were mentioned aforementioned, they use those in order to essentially make themselves be the provider of choice, which is not necessarily true. And so the consumer feels they have no outlet to do anything different. And I think to some large extent the societal tide has now shifted, where because of net neutrality and data privacy and obviously the aging infrastructure that these behemoths have, you know, they're not able to provide 21st century services anymore. So for people like us, we finally see a way for us to be able to truly respect what the consumer is demanding, which is choice. And choice on their terms, right? They should be able to do what they want to do with their data. It's not the right of an ISP to do whatever they want to do. It's the consumer's right. It's our obligation that we cannot abrogate to anybody to make sure that they understand the power that they have as a consumer. And so that's what we do every day, every minute, you know, 24/7. So.
Joining me on the line now is – oh, go ahead, Gigi.
I was going to say that's the beauty of this bill, right? Because – this bill gives the consumer the choice as to what and whether to give their personal information over to their ISP. Okay, if a consumer decides, I don't care about my privacy or I'm comfortable giving certain information, then the ISP can use it. So there's a great deal of flexibility in this bill that the internet service providers tend to miss. But again, it's about empowering the consumer Making sure the consumer actually knows what's being collected about them, so there's transparency. And finally, and this is critically important, if you read about data security breaches every day in the news, it requires the internet service provider to use reasonable measures to protect people's data. And that's really, really, really important.
Joining me on the line now is Omshri Amarasingham, Advocacy Director for the ACLU in Maine. Omshri, thanks for calling in.
Thanks for having me.
I understand you were involved with crafting Maine's new internet privacy law. We've touched on it here. What exactly does it do?
So the law is pretty straightforward, and it basically restores protections, as we've heard, that it used to exist at the federal level. And it says that basically puts control back in the hands of the consumer and says that the consumer owns their own data. And if an internet company wants to monetize that data or do other things with it, they need to get consumer permission first.
What kind of reaction have you heard to the bill, both when it was in the legislature and now that it's been signed?
We've heard a lot that this bill has been overwhelmingly supported by Mainers and real people. Really, the only opposition to the bill was the big telecom ISP lobby and the State Chamber of Commerce. Legislators were very excited that this bill was moving forward. In fact, when the federal was canceled in 2017, a number of states rushed to introduce similar privacy laws. And the telecom lobby was successful in killing all of those bills in every state. And Mainers and I think people across the country are very excited that there is momentum again to protect privacy at the state level.
Omshri, I'm going to ask you to hold on to the line, if you would. Stay on the line. And I want to turn to Gigi. Gigi, Omshri mentioned when the federal law was overturned, you worked on that law. Can you kind of briefly explain to us what happened in 2016? Federal law was passed and then was overturned. Give us the outline of what we had as protections as U.S. citizens for a while, and then why that was reversed.
Sure. And first, I want to congratulate Omi, who did an amazing job. She was like my Sherpa when I was in Augusta, and the ACLU has just done an amazing job. So congratulations to her and her success, because she's fantastic. So that's number one. I've got to say that. So it wasn't a law that was passed. So this was a rule that the Federal Communications Commission, under Chairman Tom Wheeler, for whom I worked, passed in 2016. And it's very similar. In fact, the main law is largely based upon it, which, again, gave, as Omi said, consumers control over their data. So sensitive data, basically, the internet service provider has to ask for affirmative permission to use the data in any way. Use it, share it, sell it. So, and there's a whole huge category, things like financial information, health information, children's information, your social security number. These are things the ISP has to say, affirmatively say, do you want us to use this? Okay, and most consumers are not going to give permission, and they shouldn't, right? Then for things other than that very large category of sensitive information, the ISP has to essentially ask whether you want to opt out of them sharing or selling or using that information for any reason. So, but they have to, you know, make sure that you get that opportunity and that opportunity is transparent. And finally, as I said before, there's an affirmative obligation for the internet service provider to protect your to protect both your sensitive and your non-sensitive information. So we passed those rules in late 2016. And what happened was, it was so late in the Obama term that Congress got the opportunity to quickly overturn it by a simple majority vote. So for those not necessarily familiar with how things go on in Congress, for the most part, you've got to get 60% of votes in order to get a bill passed in the Senate. Otherwise, they can filibuster it. But using this special law called the Congressional Review Act, Congress can overturn an agency's decision if it was not that far in the past by simple majority vote. And that's what happened here. So they just wiped it off. They not only wiped it off the books, the FCC can never pass a substantially similar rule again.
It would take an act of Congress.
It would take an act of Congress, yes.
Okay.
Of course, if a future FCC wanted to pass something stronger, they could do it, but they couldn't pass something that's substantially similar. That's the exact wording of the Congressional Review Act.
So now the strategy is the states, and that turns me back to Om Shri. You expect this to face a court challenge. The bill does not go into effect for almost a year, July 1st, 2020. Have we seen the challenge yet, or do we expect it, and on what basis?
We have not seen the challenge yet, and this is a threat that both the telecom lobby and in other contexts against many other consumer and patients' rights bills in the legislature. Many of the highly paid lobbyists on the other side throw around threats of legal action, and that was a strategy that failed on a lot of bills this year, where many legislators were very frustrated to hear that when they are trying to protect their constituents. So, I mean, I think that's a good question for the folks who would bring that lawsuit. We are proud of this bill and confident that it protects Mainers, and the state legislature has the obligation to protect the privacy rights of Mainers, and we think that it would withstand legal challenge.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. That's Om Shri Amarasingham, Advocacy Director for the ACLU in Maine. Elise, I want to turn to you and ask, is a law like this enough? Will data really be protected?
This is a great starting point in the law for making sure that data is corrected. The fact that there's most likely going to be a court decision that will need to be had was also good, because America is turning and privacy rights are going to become more and more important as we get more and more inundated with information and people are and devices that are tracking what we do. So this is a wonderful starting point, and it's going to help. And it's great that it's happening here in Maine, because of Maine's reputation across the United States of being independent and advocating.
One of my colleagues this morning told me a story about being at one of the big box stores and spending some time looking at refrigerators. And then when he left the store, there was an ad for refrigerators from that big box store on his device. Was that a coincidence?
No.
And Gigi, this is one of the biggest concerns. We're thinking about being worried about somebody knowing what we're searching for example. Maybe we're searching for some sort of health problem or something, and we don't want someone to see it. But just where we are is one of the packets of data that's being sold, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, you talked about what are some of the things that, you know, internet service providers might be doing. So let me tell you a little story. And it's a very scary one. So three of the largest mobile wireless data providers, so AT&T, Sprint, and T-Mobile, sold information, the precise geolocation information about all their subscribers to data brokers, who then turned around and sold them to bounty hunters, right? So these are people who are hired to find people who don't want to be found, people like domestic violence victims, you know, people like estranged wives or estranged girlfriends, okay? So they turned around and they sold it to them for a song, like something like, you know, $100 a name or something like that. So this is the kind of information that if the FCC's rules had been in place, that information was opt-in. So in other words, the mobile carrier would have had to go to the subscriber and said, will you allow us to use and sell your precise geolocation information where you are? And of course you'd say, no and hell no. But because we don't have those rules, that information was able to be sold for a song to very, very dangerous people. And in Maine, that will now be a violation of the law. And thank God for that.
Well, we are going to take a quick break. We're talking about data privacy. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Beth's Farm Market of Warren, featuring a selection of seasonal and locally grown fruits, vegetables, and herbs, fresh picked daily. More at bethsfarmmarket.com. And Evergreen Home Performance, offering window and door replacement services as a Marvin replacement contractor. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
on the next Fresh Air.
Wenn ich bin ein Rothschild.
We'll talk about Yiddish language production of Fiddler on the Roof that's currently off-Broadway. My guest will be Joel Grey, who directed it, and Stephen Skybell, who stars as Tevye. And we'll hear songs from the forthcoming cast recording. Join us.
That's coming up tonight at 7 here on Maine Public Radio. July 20th marks the 50-year anniversary since Apollo 11 gave Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin a lift to the moon. Maine Public Television is broadcasting a special program, Chasing the Moon, a comprehensive 6-hour look at the space race with the Soviet Union, the failures and successes of the Apollo program, the final moon landing triumph, and the politics of the time. Part 3 is tonight from 9 to 11 on Maine Public Television, but you can, of course, watch again on demand with Passport or catch it on Sunday afternoon and Tuesday evenings as we offer rebroadcasts. Chasing the Moon tonight at 9 on Maine Public Television.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the programming, understanding how internet privacy works and talking about Maine's new law. Joining me, Gigi Sohn, who is national net neutrality expert and public advocate, Elise Nielsen, IT security and privacy consultant, and Kerem Durda, president and CEO of GWI. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Calling in now is John Leibowitz. He is co-chair of the 21st Century Privacy Coalition, and he is the former chairman and commissioner of the Federal Trade Commission. He's a partner in the Davis Polk Law Firm and is representing Maine's State Chamber of Commerce. Thanks for calling in, John.
Happy to be here.
You're a national figure when it comes to privacy law, but you oppose the Maine law that aims to protect people's private information. What are your objections to having this state law in place?
So, look, we all want to protect privacy. Consumers deserve a strong, clear set of rules that tells companies what they can and can't collect, and puts the control in the hands of the consumer rather than in the company. And I've known Gigi for probably longer than either of I care to admit, but certainly for a couple of decades, and we've worked together on a lot of issues. But the concern that we had and that I have about the Maine privacy law is it only applies to a tiny slice of companies. It doesn't apply to the companies, all the rest of the companies that create, you know, much more privacy risk. And indeed, the companies like, for example, Google, that have a business model that is based on collecting consumer information. So, you know, from our perspective, and I don't think Gigi disagrees with this, when it comes to privacy, what matters isn't who collects the data, but what data is collected and how it's used and protected.
So let me see if I got this clear, John. So you don't support the bill because it doesn't do enough? Would you not say it's a good start?
I think that's exactly right. Well, it has. I think I support the sentiment of the bill. I think it's well intended to try to protect privacy. But how can you protect privacy of consumers when you're not treating all information the same, when the bill isn't the law isn't technologically neutral, so that 95% plus of all information collected isn't covered by the law? And moreover, the vast majority of information that flows through broadband providers' lines is encrypted. I think Peter Swire, who is a professor at Georgia Tech and the former privacy czar under President Clinton, wrote a report saying that 91% of all traffic directed to Google sites is encrypted. So there are some constitutional flaws as well with treating different collectors of data with collectors of data differently when they collect the same data. But putting that aside, you need to have, one, a comprehensive solution that applies to everyone across the board, healthcare companies, financial institutions, everyone else that collects, edge providers, everyone else that collects information. And then two is the better approach, and the approach that the 21st Century Privacy Coalition supports, is a strong federal law that protects consumers no matter what state they're in or drive, you know, or drive through.
Earlier in this program, Elise said she believes that the bill is a good start. The law is a good start. Would you support a further laws here in Maine that would also protect the privacy for those very entities you were naming, the search engines and such, and social media?
Well, I'll tell you what we would support, and what I'm hopeful Congress will do is pass legislation that will take the kind of opt-in, opt-out, affirmative express consent type of approach, one that really gives consumers the power to control their data and applies it across the board to companies and also to everyone in the United States. That's the right approach. Data doesn't stay within a state, as we all know.
It sounds like both Karam and Gigi want to jump in. Karam, you go first.
Sure.
Jeffrey, so would you support something comprehensive like GDPR, what's in Europe, if you indeed want to have something completely comprehensive? Would you then support that? Because I think I think part of it is a false narrative that we have to do something completely comprehensive and then burn a lot of time trying to get there, while in the midterm or in the short term, consumers are not protected.
Well, look, I you know, from my perspective, and also from my perspective as a former FTC chair under President Obama, I absolutely look at, you know, national solutions. I think there's some good things about GDPR. I think there are some good things about the California law, which, of course, is platform neutral and tech neutral. It applies to every collector of data outside of financial institutions. So the answer is we need to look for something that is strong, that applies to everyone who collects data, everyone, every company, that gives consumers more power and upfront to control their data. And that applies across the board, because, you know, if you're driving from Portland to Boston, why should you lose your privacy protections, right? Everyone should have strong privacy protections around the country.
Gigi.
Yes, everybody should have strong privacy protections around the country, but they don't, because this Congress has failed to pass a comprehensive privacy law. And this is in the wake of, you know, week after week and sometimes day after day, stories about privacy violations across the board, across the entire economy. Hotels, retail outlets, Facebook, ISPs. I agree with you 100%, John. That's what we need. But in the meantime, while the federal government sits there and, first of all, repeals what protections consumers already had, okay, and then does nothing other than having a bunch of, you know, show horse hearings, the states have to step up and protect their consumers. And that is what Maine has done here. I'm heartened to hear that Shauna Bellows, Senator Bellows, who was the lead sponsor of the bill that passed here, is considering offering a bill that would cover the rest of the internet ecosystem next season, you know, next congressional season, legislative season. So I think that's fantastic. But we cannot sit here unprotected, and states shouldn't sit on their hands based on the promise of a dysfunctional Congress passing a comprehensive privacy bill. I find it mind-boggling. I saw a story the other day on Twitter about how British Airways was fined by the European government $229 million for not securing the data of their customers. And I subtweeted, this is what happens when you actually have a comprehensive privacy and data security bill in a country or in a set of countries. We don't have that here. So are state legislators supposed to just sit on their hands and do nothing? I think that's absurd.
I want to note that Shanna is on hold right now. Shanna Bellows is on hold right now, and we'll have her next. Elise, you wanted to jump in. Go ahead.
So just one of the key points to consider with this is a journey of our privacy rights. And there have been a lot of different venues that have been tried to be taken. As Gigi has shared, there was a federal law that was the first foray into this, and then it was not presented and could not be moved forward by an act of Congress. And so now another law is needed. There is GDPR and PAIDA up in Canada and GDPR in Europe that also are key claims. There's the California privacy law. So our privacy is really going to be a journey for Americans, and this is one of the first steps as we go through that journey. Now, several laws that we do have, for example, around security, have also split off according to sectors. You have HIPAA for healthcare. You have GLBA for financials. So it's really a journey so that you can get the right protections for the right segments. And this is a very good step in that journey.
John Leibowitz, I haven't forgotten that you're on the line with us. And before I let you go,
thank
I
you.
Want to say to you that I understand you've been here in Maine representing Maine's State Chamber of Commerce. Why does the Maine State Chamber of Commerce oppose this legislation?
I have not represented the Maine State Chamber of Commerce in testifying before the Maine Legislature. I testified before the Maine Legislature, and I think the precursor of this law that Senator Bellows introduced in 2017. I can tell you that from the perspective of the 21st Century Privacy Coalition, we were concerned about this law for two reasons. Three reasons, actually. Reason number one is it only applies, it's sort of like, yes, it only applies to a tiny slice of data collectors. The people of Maine and the people across the country deserve something stronger that applies across the board. That's thing one. Thing two is the better approach, and I don't think anyone disagrees with this, and I don't think Gigi disagrees with it either, and I am somewhat sympathetic, although Gigi knows. That there is a working group in the Senate led by very progressive Senator Dick Blumenthal of Connecticut that's trying to work on privacy legislation, and a very progressive House member, Jan Schakowsky, from Illinois, also about to move privacy legislation that, you know, it is sometimes a slog in Washington. There's no doubt about that. But the second reason is everyone deserves protection. You can't have a crazy quilt patchwork of state laws that have different and conflicting obligations. And then the third reason, that I think there are concerns, is they are constitutional. There's a Supreme Court case, there are actually a couple of cases involving the First Amendment test, various First Amendment tests, including the Central Hudson test, which says, is the government interest substantial? That's the first prong. Does the regulation directly advance the government interest? It's the second prong. And is it more extensive than necessary to serve that interest? And here, there's no doubt that a government interest in protecting privacy is substantial. But whether it directly advances the government's interest asserted is very questionable, because here it treats information differently. There's another case called Sorrell that also goes to that sort of First Amendment kind of argument. And so and an equal protection argument, because you single out broadband providers as opposed to everyone else. So I guess I would say I agree it's a journey, and I agree it's going to be clunky, and I support all the lawmakers in Maine and everyone's effort to move forward with privacy legislation. But the smarter way to do it is to make it technologically neutral. It's probably the more constitutional way to do it. And the best way to do it is really with an overarching federal privacy law. And if
okay,
and hopefully
may I respond, please?
Yeah, and Gigi, I really yes, yeah. Please do. I also really want to get to Shenna, so go ahead quickly.
Absolutely, and I apologize, Senator Bellows. But first of all, I wish John would tell people who he represents. He represents the 21st Century Privacy Coalition, which is a coalition of broadband ISPs. Yes, he was the FTC chairman.
Of course I do.
John, you really need to say that up front, okay? Could I move on? Let's talk about the patchwork. There would be no patchwork if John's clients hadn't convinced Congress to repeal the FCC's 2016 broadband rules. So that's like pushing Humpty Dumpty off the wall and complaining that he's split into 50 pieces. And speaking of patchwork, you know, states have all kinds, John, states have all kinds of privacy laws. In fact, Maine has privacy laws that protect domestic violence victims, that protect prescription information, that protect healthcare information. So yeah, there's already a crazy quilt, and we have to be careful that whatever comprehensive privacy law Congress passes doesn't actually overturn a lot of that important stuff. And let me just say one thing about the First Amendment. This doesn't have any speech implications. You can quote Central Hudson or Sorrell all you like, but I don't know what the speech implication is here. So it's very fancy to throw out,
you know,
First Amendment or Larry Tribe or all that kind of stuff. But I don't, what's the speech implementation?
Okay, great.
Here?
We do need to go to break, John. I want to give you a chance to respond.
Okay. Look, again, the 21st Century Privacy Coalition is a collection of broadband companies. It's on the website. I said that when I talked to your producer. The most important thing here is you get privacy right. And the way you get privacy right is by doing what we called for in a 2012 FTC privacy report. It's by giving consumers more control over data. It's by ensuring that the FTC has things like fining authority, which is why it can't fine companies for first-time violations. And it's worth pointing out, I wasn't going to point this out, that when the FCC proposed a version by regulation of what Maine has passed, the FTC, my former agency, controlled then by Democrats, pointed out 27 different flaws in the proposal, and then said the approach, and this is from a Democrat-controlled FTC, is not optimal because
and they supported it.
Generally applicable.
They supported the final proposal.
Let me finish. Generally applicable laws are needed to ensure appropriate protections. In other words, it needs to be technology neutral. And what we all know is when one agency says to another agency, this outcome is not optimal, that's Washington speak for this is not a particularly smart idea.
Okay, we need to wrap it up.
And we listened to them and we changed it.
John Leibowitz is a partner with Davis Polk Law Firm. He represents, you did not represent Maine State Chamber of Commerce. I'm sorry, that's the information I was given. But former chairman and commissioner of the FTC, we will get to Shenna Bellows and your questions when we get back.
You make Maine calling possible. As do Maine Farmland Trust, celebrating 20 years of growing the future for farming. Share your stories and get involved at MaineFarmlandTrust20th.org. And Diversions Puzzles and Games, committed to offering fun, social, and technology-free ways to connect at Hannaford Plaza by Main Mall and DiversionsGames.com.
Coming up on the next Commonwealth Club program, Shannon Watts founded Moms Demand Action to take on the phenomenon of gun violence in America. Join us as Watts describes how she marshaled the power of mothers across America to push for gun regulations in state legislatures on the next Commonwealth Club radio program.
That's coming up today at 2 here on Maine Public Radio. This week, our Maine Public News Tell Me More tour is heading to Ogunquit as Maine Public News travels the state to hear directly from you and learn what you feel are the most important issues in your community, and how Maine Public News can best serve you and keep you informed. We'll be in Ogunquit tomorrow evening at 5:30 at the Ogunquit Museum of American Art at 543 Shore Road. Our discussion will be led by Deputy News Director Susan Sharon with news reporter Patty White, who will also share their experiences about reporting in Maine and some of the projects and stories they're working on. For more information about all the Tell Me More tour visits, please visit mainpublic.org and click on events or the banner ad.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we are learning about internet privacy protection. Joining me, Karam Durda with internet service provider GWI, Gigi Sohn, who is a national net neutrality expert and public advocate, and Elise Nielsen, who is an IT security and privacy consultant. Her company is, Webgistics. Webgistics. I wanted to get that out there. Give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Shenna Bellows is on the line with us. She's the state senator who sponsored this legislation. Shenna, we were talking about you, as I'm sure you heard. Are you following this up with more legislation?
I am indeed, and I'm very proud of the bipartisan work that went into this. Republican Senator Stacey Aaron from South Scott County was a key partner in working with me and a large group of people to work on this legislation to make sure that it was constitutional. And this is what Mainers need to know, that starting in 2020, your internet service provider, that's your on-ramp to the internet in Maine, won't be able to sell or share your data without their consent. But I heard loud and clear from the Chamber of Commerce and other groups that they thought this bill didn't go far enough. And that's why I'm introducing legislation next session to take a look at the edge providers, the Googles, the search engines, and the social media providers that are currently harvesting data. That's their profit model, and we definitely need to have checks and balances at the state level in the absence of federal protections.
All right. Well, Shanna, I really appreciate you calling in. I know that you were on hold for quite a while, but I very much appreciate it. Elise, I want to turn to you before I go to any more calls and ask you, this bill does not go into effect for almost a year. So even if it's not challenged, even if it stays in place, what do you recommend that people do between now and then to protect their own privacy?
So one of the things I recommend is that people look at their browser settings and make sure that things are not being traced. And you can actually go in and check out whether how much cookies you have that are actually running, set some anonymity within your browser to be able to set it. And then I also recommend you go and check the Google site and also Facebook and review what their settings are on you and be able to set your privacy accordingly. The other things are some simple things, right? That people are like, well, really? I recommend that. But if the guy who runs Facebook does it, I would recommend you do it. And one of those is put some tape over your microphone and put some tape over your actual video camera. Nice little piece of masking tape, nice little piece of electrical tape, but it does provide some privacy for you.
Okay. We have a Facebook comment from Martha. If you opt out of sharing, can the provider alter what they provide to you? For example, discriminate between customers who say yes and those who say no. Under this bill, Gigi, the provider cannot alter what they provide to you, correct?
That is absolutely correct.
That's correct.
They cannot deny you services just because you're not willing to give up your privacy. And that's a critically important part of this bill.
A Facebook message from Eric. Are any companies or corporations exempt from this bill? If so, who specifically and why?
So this bill really focuses on the telecommunications companies. So if, as they were relying to round your on-ramp onto the internet, so whether you use Verizon or AT&T for your cellular service and surf that way, whether you use Spectrum at home in order to be able to have the internet cable provided from there, those are really the focus areas on this bill.
All right. We'll go to Brian, who's calling from York. Hi, Brian. Go ahead.
Hi. I have probably a really weird question, but if these companies are profiting off of my data, do I have the right to, instead of opting out, can I sell it to them for 50% commission? Or conversely, if they're making money off of my data, could I sue them for making money off of my own personal property?
Karam?
I'm pretty sure it depends on the end user agreement that the ISP has crafted together with their customers. So that defines what they can do, what rights and obligations both parties have. So in our case, you know, if somebody said, well, I want to do this, we'll say, well, absolutely, because that's your data. You can do whatever you want with it. We're not going to touch it. We don't do anything with it. But if you want to go ahead and do something with it, that's your right, that's your obligation, that's your responsibility. But it may depend on what each ISP has, and I'm not familiar with what Charter does or, for example, what Consolidated may or may not do. But it boils down to what understanding is.
Gigi, are we looking at a possible future where people do package and sell their own data?
And I think that would be fantastic. I mean, that is not the case now. If I had to guess, I would think most people's agreement with their ISP basically gives the ISP the right to use their data willy-nilly without any compensation. But I think it would be a much better world if we got to negotiate, if we wanted to sell our data and make them pay for it. Why not? I just don't think that's not the world we live in right now, and therefore you need laws like the one that Maine passed.
Brian, thanks for your question. Comment from Jeff on Facebook, possibly related. Although Maine law calls for IDing alcohol and tobacco purchase if the buyer appears 27 or younger, some stores proof and scan your driver's license no matter how old you are. Why is this allowed? It makes a mockery out of other judgment the employees would use on a job and puts personal private info into unsecured corporate servers. I don't know, Elise, are you familiar with this? I've had this happen where someone asks for a driver's license and they scan it.
I always take it as they're trying to be complimentary to me, given my age.
Well, same here. And I say, how come I don't ever have a witness? But practically speaking,
what's happening to that data? And it happens a lot at Whole Foods now, which is under Amazon. So practically speaking, that then becomes a part of your Amazon profile with your actual driver's license and information. And I've seen it happen there. I'm not sure if it's continuing practice, business practice, but they scan it. It becomes a part of the Amazon information that goes through. And then they can actually utilize this as more technology gets into the environment where we're actually starting to see cameras in different locations and IoT. And Amazon also sells you Alexa. So, you know, it's a bold footprint around your data.
Interesting. Oh, my goodness. Good question, Jeff. A tweet from Colin. Is there a way legislation can be brought to vote for a public or discounted private VPN option? We don't have Shenna on the lines anymore. Is this something that you all believe would be feasible?
So,
well, if I could address that. Well, first of all, John Liebowitz way overstated how much information is encrypted. And the same report to which he referred also way overstated how many people use VPNs, which are, you know, virtual private networks that allow you to protect your information. I love the idea, but I do think that he overstated how much information is encrypted. And just to put a fine point on something I said before, even if information is encrypted, the internet service provider can still see what websites you go to. They may not be able to read the content, but they can still see whether you turned your lights on, whether you're watching TV, you know, what websites you go to. And again, combined with the fact that they have a lot of personal information that they need in order to provide you service, allows them to, you know, develop this dossier on you that nobody else can.
So can they see, for example, that you've gone to the American Cancer Society website? They don't know if you're looking up a specific type of cancer or whether you're donating money, but they know that you've gone to that website?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. One of the things to really be cautious on and to be cognizant of is there's a difference between security and privacy. And the VPN and the secure item is sort of like the piping of your plumbing in the house. It's the piping. It's how it flows. It's how you make sure it doesn't leak. However, what's in the piping, the water that gets through, that's really where you get your private, you know, that's the content of the information. And that's what we're talking about here is, you know, you're authorized to use this information. How do people use it? And the lack of getting that authorization, we don't have a way to do it now, as Gigi has shared many times. So being able to say, hey, you are authorized to use this is really a key first step. And now, granted, it's with the telecommunications company, but Senator Bellows is going to present a bill next year so that we can have a widened perspective. There are, and that's kind of where to have the consideration. So you look at the VPN as the plumbing, and you look at the water as what goes through as the privacy component.
We'll go to Roger, who's calling from Freeport. Hi, Roger. Go ahead.
Hi. I'd just like to encourage your listeners to use search engines other than Google that do not track your search data, such as DuckDuckGo or StartPage.com. And I use DuckDuckGo, and I find it fully as functional as Google. And also, there, on another note, you can use the Opera web browser, which has an embedded VPN, which makes it kind of seamless. But anyways, I don't know whether anybody mentioned that, but I think the alternate search engines are something that people can use in the meantime as we're trying to address this legislatively.
Thanks. Sure. Thanks for your call, Roger. I appreciate it. And that's the same thing that our tech experts have said that they do when they've been on our program. We're going to move to Stephanie. Stephanie, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Pembroke.
Oh, hi. Go ahead.
Yes, my question would be having the opportunity for our communities to have an opportunity to do more municipal broadband, and would that provide more security for us? Would we have more control? I understand that it was fought by the big boys in Colorado and other areas because they don't want to do that. They're losing money. But I'm just wondering if municipal broadband would be provide more security.
Karam, you have an answer to that?
I do, because we do a lot of projects with municipalities, and we are a fervent believer that municipal broadband is part of the solution. It truly depends on how the municipal broadband is organized, because municipal broadbands would like to have an operator for that network. If they have an operator with that network, they should have a very tight-clad agreement with that operator about data privacy and security. If they're going to do it themselves, they better have the infrastructure and the capability and the technical know-how to implement privacy and security measures. But either way, they have the tools available to them. And, you know, municipal broadband is indeed one of the answers to this whole monopolistic behemoth thing that's been going on for the last 30-some-odd years. And this is a manifestation of that, where it says, look, the consumers want to do something. You know, for so long you can only, you know, get pillaged by Charter and pay $80 and not get what you're actually paying for. So now we're going to do our own thing. When you do your own thing, you can determine the terms and the conditions of what you want to do. And so for people like us, when we work with municipalities, we say, you know, if you want us to completely data protect everything and lock it down, not a problem. We can do that. We should do that. And that's part of the conversation that consumers need to have on a societal level. And say, this is what I want. And coming back to this whole idea of, you know, protection, it is immensely important to understand there's a lot of federal and state dollars that go out that build infrastructure in the United States. That infrastructure is built upon terms and conditions that are not necessarily very pro-consumer today. So it is incumbent upon us as taxpayers, as participants in the community, as participants in the social contract, to say where the money, you know, where the money goes, it should have certain audit rights, it should have certain capabilities and capacities to protect data. And I think that's really, really important, because that's how you break the monopoly. That's truly, truly the way to break the monopoly.
Stephanie, thanks so much for your question. And that is going to be the last question this hour. Thank you so much to our guests, all three of you. So interesting. The voice you just heard, Karam Durda, the president and CEO of GWI in Biddeford. Also here in the studio with me, Elise Nielsen, a Maine-based IT security and privacy consultant who founded WebGistics. And also on the line with us for this entire hour has been Gigi Sohn, a national recognized expert in net neutrality and public advocate. She is a distinguished fellow at the Georgetown Institute for Technology, Law, and Policy, and served as counselor to the chairman of the FCC. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Ella Boyd took your calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling and a lot of links at mainecalling.org. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. And a quick note about a community event. Maine Public's Tell Me More tour is coming to Ogunquit tomorrow evening. That is Thursday, July 11th, starting at 5:30. Members of our news team will be there at the Ogunquit Museum of American Art to hear about what matters to you. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.